So it doesn't seem to matter what I do. Everything I touch doesn't turn to gold.
There you go. Right. Hashtag gamble aware. Just don't bet on what West Ham. Playoff finishing line draws ever closer for Reading Football Club as that realisation dawns upon all of us that, wait a minute, we're probably actually going to have to go through this thing. Two wins over Leeds and Blackburn sets us on course for that promotion lottery. We'll look over the best and worst moments from that 1-0 victory over Leeds and 3-1 win over Blackburn here on the Tyler Sten Podcast 124. We've also got your questions in the mailbag and a big game at Norwich to look ahead to on Saturday. I am Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersten.com. Thank you very much, as always, for joining us on this show. And before I introduce my two co-hosts, a massive thank you to everyone who continues to contribute to the Patreon campaign. Just on this very show, we are using two brand new pieces of equipment on my two co-hosts' head at the moment, two nice shiny new pairs of headphones. And you might have noticed some YouTube bits and pieces as well. That is all thanks to your kind generosity. We've been able to pay for a couple of bits of video editing software, so hopefully you're all enjoying those. And this week's thanks go to Martin Ingram, Dave McCrate, and to Pseudo One, who have all put their hands in their pocket and joined that elite circle, gone the extra mile to show that yes, we do like what you do, guys. Please keep doing it. So thank you to all of you and everyone else who continues to contribute. Anyway, without further ado, my two co-hosts this week, Mr. Alan West. Westy, welcome back.
Hello everybody. Hello Wim, how are you?
I'm not so bad, thank you, Westy. And Mark Mayo, assistant editor at the Tyler Sten. Mark, welcome back as well.
Thank you very much.
We've got two wins to talk about and Reading 9 points clear of the chasing pack, so I think this might be a pretty positive podcast.
Empty mail sack, is it?
Quite small, yes.
Hell, I thought it might be, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, we like that. It's a good sign. It's a sign that we're winning. Anyway, as I said, two big games to get to, so we'll delve straight into that. Let's get into that recap.
View from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping this week's Championship action.
So there was plenty of build-up to the Leeds game on Saturday, gents. Lots of niggling aggro. The fans of both sides had 2 weeks for that international break to really get into each other. Lots of mud flying from either side. Even the players and management was niggling at each other. You had Jan Kermigant saying Leeds had no plan B without Chris Wood. You had Monk and Stam giving sort of veiled little criticisms of each other. All that hype, and it turned into a 1-0. But Westy, only a 1-0, but was it worth all that build-up?
It was worth all the build-up. I really enjoyed it. It's probably two games I've really enjoyed this season at home. And the Fulham game, when we won, that last-minute penalty dramas, and this week against Leeds, I thought it was excellent. It was the atmosphere. I thought the players were really good. I thought certain players were back to their best. I really enjoyed this game. And I think I spoke before when I've been on here, and I said, where's Reading chances come from, where they've played in behind and they've had opportunities to score and they've come in abundance all of a sudden? I think it's really starting to click and they're looking stronger and stronger now, Reading, which is good.
Mark, what did you make of it? Did you feel that extra bit satisfying? I know Will wrote our match report and he sort of explained the reasons why. Felt a bit more like the old Reading, sort of upsetting one of the big boys for a change.
Yeah, it did have kind of a nostalgic feel about it, didn't it? I also thought it was a great advert for the Championship. It was a really nice game to have on TV, as you say, with the atmosphere, the chances created, the kind of to and fro of the game. But as we say about the Stam saying they kind of lacked a plan B, I felt like in the first half, Leeds kind of lacked a plan A, really. I didn't get any idea of exactly what they were going to do apart from come with two banks of four and set up kind of to let us pass it round. But we were quite comfortable with that. And as we got the goal with a bit of an unusual play, let's say. But I still think that we certainly deserve the points.
Yeah, a goal from a throw-in, Westy.
Yeah,
how
great.
Often does that happen?
Very rarely. And what a great strike, though. It nearly took Rob Green's arm off, I think, by the time he got his hand to it. But yeah, it was a great strike from Kermigan. It was been a bit sloppy from Leeds, admittedly. But I thought Reading were well worth the points on the day. And even in the second half when Leeds huffed and puffed, they never looked like blowing a house down for me.
Yeah, Reading creating several really good openings. Roy Bearin's having two golden chances. Gareth McCleary having another one as well. I asked this of Handbags on the post-game show we did on YouTube. But where do you two sit on this? Were you glass half empty in terms of, oh God, we're missing loads of chances? Or was it glass half full in that, oh great, we're creating these chances?
Yeah, like I said earlier in the show, just when we started, I think we've looked at the season and the football's been a bit ploddy at times. I think we'd all have to agree on that. And it didn't look like it was going anywhere. And I said, personally, that if you looked at the chances Reading create, there's been very few this year when they've run through on the goalkeeper. And in the last two matches, they look to have addressed that. They are playing that ball over the top. Now, we have got a pace down the wings. And although we've missed the opportunities, it's not hurt us on the day. And if they continue to make them sort of chances, they will score goals.
And part of that, Westy, I think, is John Swift, who's finally back to that sort of form that we saw right at the start of the season before he got that injury with under-21s, creating goals. This week he picked up the Man of the Match award on Sky Sports and then proceeded to swear on air.
Yeah, not showed a bit of passion. That was nice.
Not the first Championship player to do that as well.
After they beat Leeds, I think, as well.
It's just one of those things. You got to feel the moment.
The passion of beating Leeds.
He was excited, wasn't he? That was a good thing. I think it's nice to see in a player that he comes off the pitch excited about the result. It's good. Yeah.
And it's great to see him getting into that sort of form just at the right time of the season, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. I thought, we're going to move on to the Blackburn game, but I thought he looked much better on the ball. He looked a lot sharper. We said about getting your match fitness back when you've not played for a few weeks, and it clearly looks like he's got it back now. But ironically, the player that we had been looking to win us games over the last months or so, McCleary's form seems to have dropped off completely.
Ooh, horrible. We'll get into...
So as one picks up, one sort of drops off. But again, it's not hurting us.
Yeah, we'll get into his sloppy moments against Blackburn shortly. But I was going to compare Westy... that impact of Swift, almost like, do you remember when Simon Osborne came back towards the end of that 94-95 playoff season? Because he had missed a big chunk and he came back towards the end of the year and really sort of powered us through. Mm-hmm. And Swift just seems to be doing that. He's just added that little bit of extra spark to the midfield that we've been missing.
Yeah, we knew at the start of the season he was scoring a lot of goals and he was a sort of talisman for us in midfield. And like I say, his form dropped away with his injury. But yeah, with him coming back to form and a few... of the other players coming into form now and the fact that we're getting all injured players back, but to say we just look stronger and stronger.
Mark, the other key incident coming out of that game on Saturday was a rather ugly one. Liam Cooper stamping on Reece Oxford. He's picked up a 6-game ban from the FA. They've retrospectively looked at the video and they've given him that hefty ban. He accepted the charge, though he denied that he did it. Obviously, just didn't want to get a longer ban. Any doubts from the two of you at all about that stamp, Mark, starting with you?
No, I really don't think there can be. If you look at the incident and you think of it from a Leeds perspective as to, oh, maybe he's jumping over him or something. He's a grown man. He can jump more than 2.5 feet over someone. You know what I mean? It's just, any argument has fallen down and the FA are quite clearly trying to stamp out the stamps, shall we say, because it was the Tyrone Mings thing. He got 5 matches for a more dubious sort of call they made on that. So yeah, I couldn't really complain if it was the other way around, that's for sure.
Westy?
Yeah, I thought it was disgusting. I thought he's made an attempt to jump over him, but his foot has come down with such force that there's no doubt in my mind that he meant to kick him in the head.
Yeah, 6-game ban, I think, does send out a strong message. And the thing that's annoyed me is Leeds have come out and said, well, he's not that type of player.
Doesn't matter.
Also, how can you not be that type of player if you've just done that?
Yeah, exactly.
He pleaded guilty as well, so kind of admitted it.
To be fair to him, he did say, I don't think I did this, but I'm going to accept the charge. Yeah. So he's sort of saying, I don't think I did it, but I'll sort of accept it.
I think the cameras show that he clearly meant it.
Yeah.
And that's not exactly what he deserves.
A lot of Leeds fans complaining, though, that Tyler Blackett escaped punishment. His arm made contact with the head of Chris Wood. Looks half of one, 6 dozen of the other to me. Again, you've seen it back now, Westy. Do you think Leeds have got a good case for a gripe?
I don't think any Leeds fans complain when they've chucked 2 bottles at our goalkeeper. So I don't know what they complain about, really. I thought Blackett and Wood, they sort of battled with each other all day, and it's just one of those things. I don't think Blackett meant to catch him in the face. I thought Wood made the most of it at the time.
Yeah, the bottle's instant, just going away from that. It's just horrible. Actually, what's the point? Just grow up.
It's pathetic.
Just absolutely grow. I mean, what? Anyway, I don't think anyone will disagree with that. Just morons. You're absolute morons, and you shouldn't be at football games. Anyway, Mark.
Don't hold back there with
me. I'm just sorry. It's true. No excuse. Tyler Blackett, lucky?
It could have been on the day, but I don't think retrospectively they're going to pull that up because at the end, you know, his arm goes towards his head, but his whole body does at the same time. It's not a clear motion. If we look. Talked about the Mings one a few minutes ago, but the Ibrahimovic elbow on Mings, that is your clear-cut elbow to the face.
Definitely.
Blackett's isn't that.
The other thing here is that we don't know whether it was mentioned in the referee's report. This was the key with the Cooper incident, in that the FA can go because it wasn't mentioned in the report and it wasn't seen to be. I know that the referee on the day, Keith Stroud, wasn't it? He went over to his assistant to sort of speak to him, but clearly neither of them saw the Cooper incident. I think they must have seen what happened with Blackett and Wood and deemed that they've made their decision. So you can't go back and re-referee it unless new evidence or a new angle comes to light. And clearly that hasn't done so. So a 1-0 win. Great, fantastic. We're all on a massive high after that one. Blackburn come up on Tuesday night, and this had that potential to be that little banana skin, because over the last few years, Westy, this has been the type of game when Reading don't turn up. You think of Knights at home to Wigan.
Yep. Barnsley.
Birmingham. Huddersfield, yeah, constantly.
All sorts of Knights this where they just get that slightly easier team and they just take their foot off the gas. Thankfully, this wasn't the case. They were better than Blackburn for all but about a 20-minute spell, I think, in the second half, and fully deserved 3 points.
Yeah, I thought in many ways it was a very similar game, except for it was up against a side that weren't as good as Leeds to a certain extent. So the first half, I thought Reading, they bossed it. They was in control of the match. They kept the ball well. They moved the ball quicker, which we said about, and I thought it was really good first half from Reading. Professional, got the chances and scored, and the game was dead. And I think we all knew that Blackburn were going to come out and try and throw the kitchen sink at it like Leeds did. But I know the goal was sort of, it was a great strike, but other than that, they didn't really give us too much trouble. And as soon as they scored, we just upped it again.
There was one fantastic save from Al Habsi. Another great
clawed it away behind him, didn't
brilliant.
It?
Brilliant save, yeah. But we always thought there was a little bit more in Reading than there was in Blackburn. And as soon as they did score, I mean, I said about McCleary, I thought he was poor on the day, but his goal was really good because he didn't have anything to shoot at, really.
Yeah, Blackburn going to 3-4-3 in the second half. They lost Charlie Mulgrew early on. He was stretched off and they made a double sub at the break as well. So they really just went for it. And I was having a chat with Wim Senior earlier and he was saying, oh, well, Blackburn came on to us. And I said, it's so much easier. If you're a team down the bottom, you've got absolutely nothing to lose. Of course, you're going to check the kitchen sink.
It's 2-0 football. Yeah. It's the definition of 2-0 football. They went 3-4-3. We did get caught out a little bit by it. They got their goal, but then, as we say, we kind of, that chance that McCleary finished was after about two more shots from range that got blocked, and then eventually it fell to someone who could score.
If Reading have had a little bit more quality than they've got, they would have took Blackburn apart, because we had more than one occasion where it was 3-on-2 or we had breaks on them that we had made better passes. We've missed it passes, or we've put passes too short and they've gone in the wrong areas. A decent side would have destroyed them.
You would like to think that if Lewis Grabham was in the place of Roy Behrens or Gareth McCleary this week getting some of those chances, he would have had two or three Reading goals to his name by now. And I suppose that's the downside of having wingers as your forwards.
Yeah, again, as I said, it's just a lack. In both games, I thought they lacked a little bit in front of goal, which will cost you if you're playing better sides than they were. But as it was enough. And when, I know you put down there, was it sloppy finishing in general? Yes, it was, but it didn't hurt us on either day when it could have done.
And an interesting stat there, Blackburn winning the possession battle.
Yeah.
Who would have predicted that one going into the game? 52-48, so not a lot in it. We've talked about the forwards a little bit. Let's talk about the defenders. Although I'm going to talk about Tyler Blackett's offensive work. What a little dinky ball in for Jan Kermgen for the opener.
Yeah, it was good. And I think if you looked at the game, Blackburn, we had a lot of opportunities for defenders to run into midfield, where Blackburn was either, because we pushed centre posh a lot of players up now, don't we? So he was sort of playing with five against their defence. So there was defenders that weren't doing this during the start of the season. Instead of making a load of passes, they're seeing the space in front of them and running into it. And it caused Blackburn all sorts of problems.
Yeah, and that sort of explains, I suppose, why the possession is a bit down, because they were prepared to take that gamble. And they did the same on Leeds on Saturday as well. Yeah. They weren't afraid to go for that longer, more direct ball. So it's nice to see Stan being pragmatic. Mark, what did you make of the general defence? Because we didn't see Paul McShane back. Yap said in the build-up to the Leeds game that he was hopefully he'll be back. Thiago Lloris back in training as well. But it gave a chance, especially with Jordan Abiy picking up an injury against Leeds as well, gave a chance for Reece Oxford to make his first start in a Reading shirt. What did you make of his first full start?
I think he's very much a Premier League player of the moment, isn't it? He's very good on the ball. His technique is pretty much as perfect as you want from a centre-back. His vision, a little bit shaky at times, picked out the wrong man every now and again, but he was very calm on the ball and he was happy to stick a foot in. He's very slight. I would say he kind of looks like me in respect. He's quite a lanky defender, and I'm not built like a footballer, so
he's not that good looking.
This is a podcast for a reason. he was decent enough, and I think going forward he's got confidence. I think that's the thing with Blackett as well, is he's got a lot more confidence now, which is so important for these young players. And he's good. I think I like him, and I think he's championship football might struggle going into the playoffs and the sort of dog eat dog world that it'll be. But going forward, I would say he's a very good player.
Do you think it's a case of McShane, though, just come straight back into that defence? Or do you think Stam has to almost stick with him? I know Oxford went off late on. He was holding his hamstring a bit, so I don't know what his fitness is. But if he is fully fit, do you have to keep with Oxford in the team on Saturday?
No, I think McShane will come straight back into the team. But again, I thought he was very impressive. I was impressed with him. He's like you say, he's a Premier League centre-back of the day. He looked quick. I thought he was decent in the air. He didn't get beat in the air very often. And his touch and his passing was very good. I mean, he made, like I say, made the wrong decision now and again. He tried to play balls that were not really on and he got caught out. But he's learning the game. And for a player of his age to step into a game like that, I thought he'd done excellent. I thought he was really good.
Yeah, and I couldn't leave this recap without giving a lot of praise to Jan Koemgren. 3 goals this week. He's in the same week that he's announced he's going to retire at the end of next season, no matter what happens. 180 minutes. I was saying at half time, I think, take him off, Yap. You know, rest him up for Saturday. But he gave everything he did. And
I think he would have took him off if it had been a bit more comfortable. I think when they started to play, get up against us a bit, I bet he thought, I need him on. Mm. So he left him on. Well, he scored and made it 3-0.
He took Popper off after 10 minutes of the first half. And you sense if it if it would have been a little bit more comfortable, that probably would have been Koemgren coming off for McCleary.
Yeah.
Just to have 3 wingers through the middle, which would have worked quite nicely. But because he knew that Blackburn had come into the game, he had to take off Popper.
And he'd done very similar against Leeds. He took the young players off. You know what I mean? He took Kelly off. He took the young players off in this game against Blackburn. And I think if it had been more comfortable, he'd have left them on the pitch and took off some of the more experienced heads.
Yeah, but just a fantastic work rate from the man. What is he up to? I think 13 goals is it now for the season?
Well, I said all season when he was injured, I said he's pivotal, Koemgren. If they were, they're the only player they really can't afford to lose. I don't think anyone can take his place, do what he does. So yeah, I thought he's been excellent, and shame I was shouting 2 more years when he scored his second
goal. I don't know, is it a case that he's built around the team, or has the Amsterdam actually built the team around him? Because as you say, no one else in that squad can do that role. No one else has the physicality, etc., etc. But does Yapstam kind of just happen to have him there, or does Yapstam actually consider him more integral than we think?
I think Jan Koemgren's made himself more integral than we probably thought he would have done at the start of the season. I think most of us are thinking, wow, okay, you're sort of getting towards the end of your career, maybe you need replacing. But he's been so good at not scoring goals, because obviously he's had quite a long spells where he hasn't scored, but he's so good for the side and he's so good defensively that it's very difficult to take him out. And now he's getting the balls where he wants them, where he can score goals. He's scoring goals, and that's all it needed, really.
Absolutely. I put it in a different category completely, but it's like Shane Long under Brian McDermott. If you remember Brian McDermott's the season when Long got 20-odd goals, the first half of that season, he wasn't scoring a lot of goals, but he was putting in so much work.
He defended from the front.
Yeah, and he was, and people were saying, get him out, get a new striker in, get Church in. But in the second half of the season, when the team started clicking and chance kept coming, suddenly the goals were rocketing in. Now, Koemgren's not got the raw pace that's going to get him 20 goals, but he is that sort of player. And you're right, West, he's been so integral, and he adds so much to the whole rest of the pitch.
Yeah.
Not to mention set pieces and leadership and things like that. That he's absolutely influential. If you said, from a purely striking point of view, can he, you know, would Lewis Grabham be worse than Koemgren? I'd say, well, no, probably not. It's probably about the same. If not, maybe even a very tiny edge to Grabham because of the pace. But he's got nowhere near the
all round game is not even close.
Indeed. So fantastic, Jan. Just stay fit. That's all we ask of you, Jan. Just take it easy. Put your feet up. Anyway, that has left us third, as we record this, in the Championship, mostly because Huddersfield haven't played. They've got 2 games in hand on us at the moment, but we'll forget that. We're third. We'll enjoy it.
Go win them.
73 points already. That is the average total needed to make a Championship playoff spot. Is this race done and dusted, or how many points do you think Reading need to make this absolutely secure?
I think it's done and dusted, but I don't doubt for a second they'll pick up at least another 6 to 9 points as a minimum.
Mark?
Yeah, I think the only real issue I would have is the Villa and Norwich games away from home. If we somehow get smashed in those, then there's a lot of worry. But if we get a couple of points out of those, just some nice healthy draws in those games would be absolutely fine to see us through.
I'll bite your hand off 2 points now. I'll take that completely, keep the momentum going. I think it's also, they need to keep reinforcing that they can go away to sides and get results. That Sheffield Wednesday game has hopefully done them the world of good, but they need to go and prove they can do it against two. And Villa especially are in a really good form. Their fans got to be kicking themselves, because if they'd just picked up 2 or 3 extra wins at the start of the season, they'd be in that playoff race. Good week for Reading with the results. Otherwise, you know, Fulham getting smashed up at Derby as well on Tuesday night certainly helps. I know Sheffield Wednesday won at Rotherham, but I said 9 points clear with Wednesday and Fulham to play each other. Is a very nice situation to be in. Anyway, we will get into talks of playoffs and things like that a little bit later on. But I'll just finish with the Yapstam's comments on the Blackburn game said, in every game you play, you need to focus for 95 minutes. Even when you're 2-0 up, then you need to be very sharp in going forward, in keeping that ball, in being aggressive defensively. And after half an hour at 2-0 up, we got sloppy, gave them opportunities to come out on the break, gave them confidence, and that focus slipped away a little bit. But we went forward and luckily scored the third one with McCleary, which made it a lot easier, thankfully. And after that, we had three very, very good chances to score more goals. It wasn't an easy game, and the second half was difficult, so I'm not really happy in how we played in the second half, but I'm very happy with the result. Nails it every week, does he, App? Yeah. I don't read these comments one week and go, I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I thought. I thought, yeah, we won the game, but there was still room for improvement. And again, that's good, because we're not... I still don't think Reading are playing at the best they can play. I still think they're knocking about 75-80% sometimes.
You say that, and I did say we won't talk about the playoffs, but I'll just say quickly now, Reading are good enough to beat anyone. Anyone in that top six, top seven, whoever makes it. They are good enough to beat anyone, and they've proved it this week.
Yeah, and the only thing we need to be concerned about is our away form and picking up points away from our... make sure we don't get beat easily, like we have done throughout the season.
Yeah, I'd say the defence away from home is pretty much it, but as I say, going into any game, I wouldn't fear them.
Absolutely not. Right, anyway, that does wrap up the recap. We'll move on in to some News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, just a couple of News Bites to get to, starting with congratulations for the 13 men inducted into Stars Reading FC Hall of Fame last week. We were lucky enough to be invited along. We had a little table there at the event, and I was joined by Bucks Royal and Becker on the night, so thank you. We had a few people come up to us and sort of say thanks for the stuff we do and that they like listening to the show. So thank you very much. It was really nice to actually finally put a few faces to names and stuff. So if you did come up and say hello, thank you very much. And on the night, great work put in by Star. The research and the detail done by Roger Titford, who's put this together, he's been on this show before, it's fantastic, digging up some fascinating stories about these players from Reading's deep history. A former captain, our third ever captain, died on the pitch during a game. The only Reading player to have ever done so. It's these sort of stories that, I mean, it's a very sad one, but it's a sort of, you know, fascinating. People that saved the club sort of 100 years ago from, you know, otherwise we wouldn't be here. So lots of good names going in. Of the more familiar ones from recent years, inductees included Steve Death, Roy Tranter, who helped fight off the Maxwell Thames Valley Royals takeover. You had Jimmy Quinn, Gylfi Sigurdsson, and Steve Coppell all going as well. So I know that a few people have said, oh, well, why are these players going in? Why isn't X player going in? The way they've been doing it is the goal is to get 150 in by the 150-year anniversary, and they're sort of breaking it up into year brackets. So they only sort of had one in from the 2010s, one in from the 2000s. So that's why, you know, some of your 106 icons aren't in quite yet. But just thought I'd ask the two of you, who would be your number one pick for the Hall of Fame next year?
Wow.
Can we... Is that just players and coaches?
Anyone connected to Reading Football Club.
Medeski, is he already in?
Sir John Medeski is not in, no.
I would say him, purely on the basis of where the club is now, wouldn't be possible for all of the stuff that he did.
Westy?
Evans, ex-manager.
Maurice Evans.
Is he already in it?
Can't remember if Maurice Evans went in last year or not. I'd have to double-check that. But if not, absolutely.
He gave a great service to the club. There's no reason why he won't be in it.
Absolutely not. Well, we will have a nice little YouTube video up on the ceremony, about a 5-minute video, with some interviews from AD Williams, former PA man Paul Allen.
Another person, Gordon Neat.
Fred Neat, whatever you call him,
you know who I'm talking about. He's obviously groundsman for many, many years.
I think he went in last year.
Played for Reading, so yeah, if he's in there, then good choice.
But I can't remember. I haven't got the list of last year's inductees in
front of me. Big Trevor Senior, is he in it yet?
I can't remember. I can't remember last year's inductees. I can remember this year's.
Got to have Trevor Senior in there.
Yeah, all of these players and names we've mentioned will go in. As I mentioned, the whole 106 squad will. So it's a long project, and I said credit to Star. I apologise for not being able to say exactly who went in last year, but if you head over to Star's website, just Google Star Reading and it'll come up. They have got bios and full details of the 24 people who are in the Hall of Fame so far. So, and as I said, we'll have a little video up on this year's ceremony shortly. And just a quick note as well that for those of you who haven't renewed your season ticket yet, if you want to, I don't know if you do, it's up to you, but the season ticket deadline for that early bird reduced price, that expires on Friday. So if you were thinking and waiting until sort of payday, now is your time. I'll put my hand in my pocket. I've done it. But I'm moving now. I'm leaving the East Stand, Westy.
Are you leaving?
I'm going to the Eamon Dolan.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to go up to the West.
No, not quite.
Booked in for 2045. He's moving up to the Upper West.
I'm going in with Wim Senior in the Eamon Dolan. But £305 for a season of football, it's just ridiculous.
Could be in the Premier League.
It could be a Premier League season, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, get those in. Anyway, that is News Bites done and dusted. We'll move on to your thoughts now. Let's get into that mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
As we said at the very start of the show, Reading are winning, so feedback is down. Funnily enough, people don't want to write in praising everybody. They just like to vent when it's bad. But no, a few people have chipped in. Derek Walmsley says, two very enjoyable and professional performances. Why is Reading's finishing, Kermgant aside, so poor? Any thoughts, Mark?
I think it's kind of what we alluded to earlier, is that these are chances that we weren't creating earlier in the season. And, you know, goal scoring is form-based, largely. A lot of the goals that we were scoring before were kind of outside the area or from balls in, and now they're coming through the middle. We just need players like Behrens and McCleary just to have that a little bit more composure, and hopefully they'll get the knack, effectively.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. It's basically... You've got to have a bit of quality when you go through on a goalkeeper. I mean, think with Cleary, especially against Blackburn. Every time he seemed to push the panic button. He stepped on it. I mean, he's miscontrolled it. He's overcooked it against Leeds. Sometimes I think quick players' legs run away from him sometimes, and he just didn't look confident he was going to score.
Yeah, I think he described it as the most, was it comical 35 minutes he's ever been on the pitch? And then he said hashtag space jammed or something like that. I don't know what, does that mean?
I thought he'd been on the Jamaican woodbines, but yeah, he didn't look like he was part of the rest of the game, that's for certain.
Yeah, his head was somewhere that wasn't connected to his legs, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah, the one he also tweeted, he posted to his Instagram, that one he missed where he just completely shanks it.
Tag a friend who would miss this. Wasn't it?
Awful. Anyway.
The Behrens one as well. I think the first Behrens one he had against Leeds, I thought that was difficult because it didn't drop for him and he had to take it quickly and he's trying to smash it, didn't he? And he's put it over the bar. But the second one, it's like he's seen the goalkeeper and thought, I don't fancy this, and took a swing at it and missed it by a mile. It was a weird bit of play, I thought.
Yeah. Anyway, we love you, Gareth. I'm sure you'll come good. Tim Redmayne says, if it can't be Reading, who would you like to get promoted in the playoffs from the current contenders?
None of them would like it to be Reading.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to go with the underdogs as my like preferred choice. So is that Huddersfield this year?
It's
not Leeds.
I would guess
and
so.
It's,
yeah,
it's Fulham. Like, not really that fussed. Who's the other one? Sheffield Wednesday. Nah.
Yeah, I think Huddersfield likes cuddly side, aren't they? I think they're no trouble at all. Leeds, we all hate, let's face it.
Yeah, I go by who wouldn't I miss in the Championship next season? And I wouldn't miss Sheffield Wednesday, and I wouldn't miss Huddersfield. So either of them can go up if it's not us.
We like Huddersfield. Let them go up if we're not allowed to.
But I mean, it's going to be us anyway. So
yeah, so don't have to worry about it.
Why are you asking us that, Tim? Hugh asks, would a video referee have been beneficial in a game like the one against Leeds? Now, we're not going to answer that here. That's going to be our pub chat extra after this show. So head over to YouTube. Probably be posted up sometime tomorrow for our answer to that, Hugh. Jack Simons, have we got to the point in the season where some of the younger players can start, i.e. Mate for Behrens, Watson for Gunter?
No, I don't see the point because if we're in the playoffs, then we need our top players on form for the playoffs. If they're tired... then yeah, but we're not, apart from the fact we've got to play Saturday, Monday on the Easter weekend, we're not really playing that many games. We're playing kind of Tuesday, Saturday, then after the Easter weekend, I think we're just Saturdays. So I wouldn't see the point in resting them, and I don't see the point in taking out key players that need form either.
Yeah, I think he will rest players, but it's such a big squad that he can afford to do it anyway.
He did so on Tuesday, didn't he? He took out the likes of Williams and McCleary.
He's done it most of the season, to be fair. Especially with the wingers. Now Popper and us here, he does tend to rotate them quite a bit. I think he will. I think once it's guaranteed and we certainly ain't going to go up automatically, I think last two or three games you'll see a different side.
Yeah, whether it will be younger players or just sort of players who will have a big part to play.
Quite a big squad anyway, like Graben and Much and all these players that can come in.
Yeah, I think you want to keep the likes of that and the Laurie, people like
that.
Yeah,
you could easily put in another 11, really, when you think about it.
Yeah. Peter Beck or Stam, ever contemplate dropping Behrens? Another stinker against Leeds. Consistently poor / ineffective / low work rate. Not a fan, is Peter.
I don't agree with that entirely. I thought he tracked back a hell of a lot in both games and helped the full backs. I thought he was all right, Behrens. Again, I think he's a 6.5 out of 10 most weeks, and he doesn't really pull up.
He trusts him, though, Mark. I think that's why he keeps him on the side.
Yeah, he does. I think he knows that Behrens is more than capable of turning up with the winning goal. I think he's only scored about 5 goals this season, but you could probably track them all and say that they are all pretty much vital goals. And he knows that he's more than capable of doing that in the playoffs, so he's keeping him in the side. But he's got a bit of pace down the left-hand side. I wouldn't say that anyone else in the 11 that he's been playing has that much pace, McCleary aside. And he does, I do think he works quite hard, yeah.
I think the other key thing is I don't think there's anybody else in the squad that's demanded to be in his place. Graben's had a few chances in that position, he's not really done anything. Mate's in his
unknown
glimpses, again, he's not really done a lot. Callum Harriott would be a more obvious change, but he's been injured.
Yeah.
He's getting closer to a turn, so good to hear on that front. Stephen Quinn still dealing with issues, unfortunately. But no, in light of that, I think you stick with what you know, and he's been part of a winning side for most of the season, so he's not my favourite player, but I can see why Yap picks him. James Richards says, great result against Leeds, pretty much assures a playoff place. Jan Kermgren was excellent again and has now set a retirement date. I thought he was really unlucky not to be given a chance with Bournemouth in the Premier League. Do you think, if Reading do go up, that he would still have a part to play?
I'm going to say yes, because as we were talking about how integral he is to Stam's game, Stam isn't going to go into the Premier League and change his tactics. I think he'll go in with the same way we've been playing for the last few months. And if Kermigan is still so important to that, he'll play Kermigan. I think he'll sign players like Kermigan if he's given the choice to bring in some more reinforcements in the central striker role. And Kermigan, I don't think he'll be first choice, but I think he'll be in the squad.
Yeah, Kermigan's at his level. I think putting him in the Premier League, he won't score anywhere near 13 goals. I think we all know that. So you're going to need to score goals to stay up. Where's the other goals going to come from? You're going to need some players that score goals, and they cost a lot of money. Jan Kermigan will have a part to play, but if he's starting every week, I think you're relegated.
Yeah, I completely agree, unfortunately. I think he's got a definite part to play. I mean, you can easily see him coming on for half an hour at the end of games and being in that defensive forward.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But he'll hopefully get a chance to play in the Premier League. I know, I think he got one start with Bournemouth. I think he'll get a few more than that. But unfortunately, I do agree with you, Westy. Yeah, We're relying on Jan.
The thing is, it tells you all you need to know. When players come out of the Premier League because they're not playing, it's because they ain't good enough. It's not because they're world beaters. And he's at his level. He's always been a good Championship striker. He's always scored goals in this division. And he's a good player. But when you go up to the Premier League, you're looking at a whole different level. We all know that. And he wouldn't be effective in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's like we've seen from players when Reading went up last time, people like Noel Hunt.
Yeah.
Give it everything, you know, but it just wasn't really a Premier League player.
He'd be playing against quicker centre backs, he'd be playing against centre backs that are better in the air, and he will struggle.
Anyway, that completes the mailbag. Thank you to everyone who's got in touch via @thetilehurstend on Twitter, thetilehurstend@gmail.com, and facebook.com/thetilehurstend. And of course, go and check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TileHurstEnd, where we will answer Hugh's question and loads of other great videos and bits and pieces. Mark over here has been uploading a couple of little bits of tactical analysis.
Yeah, we've been getting in some graphics and looking at where the Leeds game was won and lost. So hopefully we'll be doing that again on the... I'm away for the Easter weekend, so maybe the Rotherham game Monday weekend. So hopefully I'll look at that as well.
Yeah, or someone else on the TileHurstEnd might step up. So yeah, keep an eye on that, and obviously send us your suggestions in for what you'd like to see. Anyway, we'll get into that Norwich game on Saturday. That's coming up in Any Other Business.
The TileHurstEnd Podcast.
Any Other Business. If you'd said, Reading, we're going to be 7 places ahead of Norwich at this stage in the season and 16 points better than them, especially after they thrashed, what was it, Blackburn? Was it 4 or 5-1 on the first day of the season? Mm. Don't think a lot of people would have believed you, but here we are. I said Norwich 10th in the table, well behind us at the moment. They've only won one of the last 6. They play, I think, Huddersfield tonight. But, Westy, this is still a very dangerous team.
Yeah, I backed them to win the league at the start of the season. I thought they looked more than capable with the squad they had of going straight back up. hasn't materialised. They started really well, Norwich, and then they fell away. And they've had some shocking results. I mean, they've took some hammerings during the season. I think Sheffield Wednesday beat them 5-0 today.
Is it Brentford?
They've took a couple of beatings. But at home, I say they've got some quality. It's whether they're still interested in this season, I think. I think it's getting to the stage now where they're thinking, we can't make it, really. It's whether they take their foot off the gas. I think Reading are capable of beating them, but if the proper Norwich turn up at home, it'll be a difficult game for them.
Yeah, you look at that squad list, Mark, and it's full of recognisable players. Your Whittakers, your Dorans, Stephen Naismith, you know, player who's got a Premier League hat-trick against Chelsea only a couple of years ago. Tete, Alex Pritchard, an £8 million player as well. Cameron Jerome always scores against Reading. Johnny Howson, and they've got a John Ruddin, England goalkeeper, on the bench as well. Full of quality in that squad.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the problem in Norwich is that a lot of those players have been there a bit too long. You're talking about Cameron Jerome, Howson, are all, you know, on that brink of being a Premier League player, but they're kind of just sort of stagnating at Norwich now. And I think that they might have a bit of a refresh in terms of the squad in the summer. But it depends what type of team turns out. If they turn up with a team that actually wants to beat us and actually thinks they can get into the playoffs, then they'll cause us a few issues. If they turn up thinking the season's over, then I would expect to get something out of the game.
Well, that's nice to see this week with Reading. I mean, we talk about refreshing sides and Koppel saying you have to have young and hungry. If you look at the team that started last night, it was young and hungry, whereas Norwich have dropped out of the Premier League. Have they got the heart to get back into it? Maybe some of them haven't.
Yeah, I don't really know how this game's going to go. I see what you're saying, Mark. It's difficult to know what kind of Norwich team's going to turn up. If it's a strong, powerful Norwich team on their day and those players play up to their potential, Reading are in for a really tough afternoon, but are they just going to collapse? I mean, I said earlier, I would bite your hand off for a point right now.
Yeah, I'll take a point.
Okay.
But they've got players that can score goals, haven't they? They've got goals in the team. And again, if they turn up and have a good game, then they can beat you. But you don't know where they're at the moment with their confidence levels, their fans. I'm sure they're not entirely behind them at the moment. So Reading can start well, keep the ball like they do a lot, get the fans offside straight away. I think they can beat them. But like I say, you don't know who's going to turn up.
Yeah, could do with them drawing against Huddersfield tonight. Again, not really creating any momentum for them, but at the same point, denying Huddersfield. Okay, prediction league time. Westie, unfortunately, you're still bottom.
Yeah.
You've remained... It's only 8 points, though, and with, what, we've got six games to go?
I think it was bottom last year. I think it's just my luck there. So I've done Chelsea to win at home this week, and they got beat. So it doesn't seem to matter what I do. Everything I touch doesn't turn to gold.
There you go. Hashtag gamble aware. Just don't bet on Westie.
No.
Anyway, Westie, you're on 24. I'm on 29. Charles is on 30. And we have co-leaders in Johnny Williams and Dave Handbags Harris, who are on 32 points each. Westie, I'll give you the chance to... Go first.
I'm going to go for a 2-1 away win.
You know, for a 2-1 away win, 1v2. I'm going to go for the safe 1-1. Mark, do you want to give an honorary prediction?
I'd say 0-0 because I think our defence is decent enough at the moment, and I think they'll probably defend relatively well as well.
Okay, well, that wraps up the preview and wraps up the show this week. Thank you very much to everyone who has sent in your feedback this week and everyone who continues to listen to the show, and especially to those who contribute at patreon.com/thetarlestend, patreon.com/thetarlestend. And as mentioned, keep an eye out on that YouTube channel. Lots of good things going up on there and on the website at thetarlestend.com for all of the latest analysis and opinion. If you've got any ideas or want to join in, send us an email to thetarlestend@gmail.com. Gentlemen, have a fantastic week. We'll hopefully be back here talking about downing a few canaries.
Let's hope so.
Anyway, until then and until next week, come on you arse.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.